Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hey guys, welcome to a Wednesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. And we are taking a break from our season player preview series to do with something a little different today. I've been kind of intrigued by how I think the Pacers' offense is going to operate this season, just because they have so much roster turnover and they lost a top 20 NBA player who a lot of their offense ran through last year. So I found a master playbook specialist on Twitter to come on and talk about how we think the mostly he, but how we think the Pacers' playbook's going to transform this year. So everyone, welcome on Krangis McBasketball himself. I'll just call him Krangis the rest of the time. Krangis, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm getting excited. The Pacers' first game is tomorrow against the Bucks. I'm excited to watch Giannis and the Pacers. I won't tell you which one I'm more excited to watch because this is a Pacers podcast, but I think I just gave it away. So the Pacers are in a unique era, like I just said, where Paul George is gone, and a lot of their sets last year on offense kind of ran through him, and I know they did a lot of, you know, weird late clock isolations and double screens for him. Can you kind of touch on the offense last year and what you saw more often than not?
Yeah, for sure. So I had the opportunity to work on a big consulting project. I won't say who it's for, but part of that was going through 20 of the 30 NBA teams, and the Pacers were one of those teams. So I had a chance over the summer to really dive into some of the film, and I did so the past couple of days too to refresh my memory. And some of the things I saw from Indiana were pretty good. A couple of concerns, but in general, I'd say that they were running good offense. It was an above average offensive scheme last year. This was a team where you had good set plays. And then when you get into like the freelance, so when we throw the ball into the post to Turner, there was also stuff going on. It wasn't just give it to him and then four guys stand around, which is something that as someone who covers the Lakers, I see all the damn time. So it was a nice change of pace to be able to watch some Pacer film. They did a good job with those set plays, some of those freelance things. Like you said, they utilized Paul George a ton, and what they would do is they'd run a bunch of set plays just for him. They'd put him lots of pin downs galore. They'd have him come up and set screens for the ball handler and then pick off and then pop off of those and get the ball from that. They were pretty creative in the way they used him. They'd have him come off of elevator screens, hammer action, all kinds of different things. But he was definitely a focal area of the offense last year. One stat that I found just to illustrate how much turnover there's been. Last year, the Pacers were the fifth most efficient team in isolation, and they had 710 of those possessions. Only 77 of that 710 are returning for this season. So things are definitely going to be changing. You were saying off air, and is something I saw in film, is the Pacers really do try to cater what they do to their personnel. And digging into their personnel a little bit more, I think they have a lot to work with. So if you're a Pacer fan this year, just from a scheme perspective, you have players who can do some things and a couple guys with good versatility. So, yeah, that's what I saw. A lot of 3-out, 2-in offense, some horn sets, a lot of 4-out, 1-in. Didn't really see much like 5-out offense, and that's hard to do when you have guys like Thaddeus Young and Miles Turner both on the floor. But the Pacers were pretty smart about always having those two guys in a good position so that they weren't ruining the spacing on the play. And Turner can shoot well, and Young can a little bit as well. So they're in a good spot. I'm excited to see what they will do, but we can get into a little bit about what I think they will do.
Yeah, we absolutely will. You kind of mapped all the team's actions from last year and what percent of each play type they ran. And the Pacers' biggest one last year was pick and roll ball handler plays, and you know that's so much of a testament to Paul George, and just that they would run screens and try to get him free for whatever shot he wanted, whether it be, you know, three or at the rim or something like that. And that often led to just him kicking it out to the corners or creating some offense like that, which is nice to see. Their second most used was spot ups, which I thought was pretty much a playoff of that pick and roll ball handling, just because, you know, you got your guys in the corners and on the wings just waiting on Paul George. But again, like the first thing I said was Paul George is gone. So now it's going to be a lot different. You're not going to see as many of those double screen plays, and you're probably not going to see as many spot ups, but you might see as many ISOs because Victor Oladipo seems to like to ISO. What do you think Oladipo's role is going to kind of be in offense this year, and what kind of plays do you think cater to his skills?
So he's a guy who last year, about 40% of his half-court possessions were him running the pick and roll as the ball handler. So that's something he really, really likes to do. He was about an average passer out of it and was above average scoring from it. So that's somewhere he can be utilized, probably will like to be utilized. We'll see what the Pacers do. He's also a player who can shoot pretty well, both stationary or moving around. So that's a good asset. Like a guy like Bogdanovich, he's a great shooter, but he's a much, much better shooter catching and shooting, standing still, than he is running off of screens. So with Oladipo, you have some versatility there. He can do different things. With the ball in his hands, he can break your guy down, and he's a great cutter and driver. But then when he doesn't have the ball, again, great cutter and a good off of screen. So he's someone who, if you're looking at how do I fit this guy within my scheme, you could do a lot with him on ball, off ball. I would hope you wouldn't be isolating a ton just because that's in general, like isolation is not good offense. Even like scoring, shooting from the pick and roll as the pick and roll ball handler, if we just look across the league and across all the different actions, that's towards the bottom in efficiency. Same for post-ups. But the thing about post-ups and pick and rolls is they generate all kinds of spot-ups, like you said. They generate, while you have that going on, you can have guys coming off of screens. You can have guys cutting. So it's those things derived from the pick and roll and derived from post-ups that are very valuable. And I think Turner being able to pass out of the post and having pick and roll ball handlers who can distribute will be really important. That moving forward.
Yeah, you hit the Turner pass out of the post. We kind of talked about that off air a little, how they run that play where they pass out of the short corner with a flare screen to the top. And, you know, if you give him the ball down there, he's probably your best offensive player. Maybe Oladipo, you know, it depends what you're looking for. But, I mean, they could easily use his gravity to get that shot and get that back screen to set up a guy on the top of the key. In general, what do you think they're going to do more of this year that they did not do as much last year just because of all the roster turnover?
I think they'll probably utilize some more handoff action more. That's something where, like, an example. So one of the types of handoff situations is called Chicago action, where you have a guy standing in a corner. And this is really great out of, like, the horn setup, where you have two guys in the corners, big man at each elbow, and the ball at the top of the key. The Chicago action is where one of your big men sits a pin down for a player in the corner, and then your ball handler also dribbles to him and then hands the ball off. And that's a great way to get that corner player attacking downhill. And when you have guys like Oladipo or Corey Joseph now on the team who can really attack downhill, or Darren Collison, who is really great pulling up and taking that mid-range shot, which as an analytics guy makes me a little, but he's pretty good at it. So I think that's something that fits your personnel well this year. So handoffs, I try to utilize some of those guards in different off-screen actions. We talked about Turner being able to pass. If you can, every time you get the ball into the post, if you can have like split cuts, which is something I didn't see as much of from the Pacers. I saw lots of flare screens, but not as many split cuts where two players come together and then one of them will set a flare screen for the other one and then cut hard to the rim. Something like that can get you three-pointers and shots at the rim. So that's a good thing I'd like to see more of. It's something that over the past like 2 or 3 years has really taken control of the league, and just about every team is running those. Again, the Lakers aren't. So be happy you're not a Laker fan. But those are some of the things. Just lots of those different off-screen actions because they have good shooters on the team this year. We're looking at a lot of guys who can – Bogdanovich can shoot, Collison can shoot, Joseph can shoot, Oladipo can shoot, Glenn Robinson, he can, I'd have to double check, but I'm pretty sure he can shoot decently. Even your big men can shoot enough to create gravity and really open up the floor. So I think it's all about being able to attack with your post-ups or your pick and rolls, but then also have these other screens going on at the same time to generate those good three-point shots, generate cutting opportunities, and occupy defenders who would normally be helping on your post-up or helping on your pick-and-roll And they can't help anymore because they have to go chase their guy around a screen. So that opens up the lane a lot better and will help Turner in the post and will help guys like Collison or Oladipo driving into the lane.
Yeah, I should have clarified at the beginning. Karan just is a Lakers fan, or at least watches the Lakers more than any other team. So if he makes any Lakers references, that is why. We both just talked about flare screens, and I don't know if our listeners necessarily know what a flare screen is. Would you like to get into a little more of what those are, just because they have become such a prominent action in the more modern NBA of three-point shooting?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I'll just try to describe one and see if that works. So essentially a flare screen is a screen that you're setting for a shooter not to cut to the rim, but to cut somewhere along the three-point line, hoping that they'd be open, they can catch, and they'd shoot. So one thing that could happen is maybe you're standing at the wing, you pass the ball into the post to Miles Turner, and then I come from the top of the key and set a screen for you to run from the wing back to the top of the key. So you're running away from the basket, but you're running to the three-point line. So that would be a flare screen. You could do it the other way. It doesn't have to be towards the top of the key. It could be running from the top of the key to the wing with a screen there. It's all about getting shooters open. And there are tons of different kinds of flare screens. Like a hammer action flare screen is a flare screen where you're cutting from the wing to the corner. And those are really great when you have baseline drives. There are all kinds of different ones. But yeah, it's good to know flare screens. You'll see that a lot. The Pacers ran a lot of those last year. So in the 40 plays that I diagrammed for the Pacers in the project I worked on, 28% of them had a flare screen involved. So about one out of every four plays that I saw, and I'm sure they didn't run all these plays as equally, but of the 40 different unique plays, about a quarter of them had a flare screen involved.
Yeah, you stole my transition talking about hammer plays, because I was going to say a unique action of a flare screen is called a hammer play, where they try to get a guy to the corner on a baseline pass or to get him on the baseline. And Bojan Bogdanović, whose name we haven't said as much last year just because he's not a big initiator, but he'll be set up in a lot of these hammer plays. He shot 48% from right corner threes last year. So I kind of expect a lot of hammer plays on the right side to get him shot in the corner, whether it's Oladipo coming to the rim and setting him up or just someone at the top of the key throwing it right over the top of the screen. That's a shot I'd like to see them try to get a set into a lot, just because he's so good at it. You talked about handoffs earlier. I was always frustrated last season with the lack of handoffs the Pacers ran, just because Miles Turner is such a big-bodied guy who's also a shooting threat. So in my head, that is like the perfect handoff guy, because you have to, you know, A, stay on Turner, and B, stay on the guy he hands it off to. So it's really hard to switch that. At the same time, he could pop. You know, it's just a hard play to defend. Do you think they'll run a little more of those this year now that they don't have Paul George, or do you think they'll kind of stick with the same schemes they ran last year?
I don't think that taking George away necessarily would initiate them running it more. But I do think it would fit their personnel well. Like you were saying with Turner, it's hard to guard that when he can both pop and dive to the rim pretty hard. So having the versatility there really helps. I think part of the reason why they will run more handoffs is just because they have players on the team this year like Oladipo and like Corey Joseph who are great at driving and really like taking their guy off the dribble like that. So instead of having them go ISO, have them come off of a handoff, and it's similar to a pick and roll, and they have a step on their defender, and then they can attack. So I think it's up to the coaching staff. It will be a change for them because they didn't run a ton last year. But I think it would work just fine if they decided to go that way.
Yeah, I think there'll be a lot of trust to see if Nate McMillan will go that way. A lot of me and Adam sometimes on the pad kind of make fun of Nate McMillan, but I do think he is good at adapting to the players he has on the floor. Now we're going to take a quick break to talk about SeatGeek. Hey guys, a quick break from talking about the Pacers' offensive sets to tell you guys about SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the number one ticket aggregating site around, and if you didn't listen to our weekend podcast, we talked about some of the new features SeatGeek has that's great. But of course, on the surface, it's the best because it shows you the value of the ticket you're getting with a score. I just got tickets to the Pacers opening night game, and my score was 81, which is pretty good. And if a ticket comes out that beats the score, you can type in your email on SeatGeek, and they'll email you and tell you a better ticket is available. And SeatGeek easily values your tickets and puts all their fees in the prices, so you know you're getting the best deal possible. You can use SeatGeek on your laptop, your phone, or your tablet, and you can be sure that you're getting the best deal possible wherever you are. Adam, I know, buys his tickets on the way to the game, which is a great idea. And if you use the code LONBA at checkout, you'll get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. So I'd highly recommend you use SeatGeek and use that code LONBA at checkout. And now, back to the show. Okay, and we're back to talk a little bit more about the Pacers offense. I want to transition into a play that the Warriors have perfected and the league is running more and more and more, except for the Pacers. It's called Floppy. Well, it's not really called Floppy. Floppy is a set. But Floppy, essentially, you put a shooter under the basket and you have a screener on either block to try to, you know, he can cut off either one and get to the wing for a three-pointer on either side. And you can run actions off of him getting the shooter getting the ball on the wing, or he can just shoot if he's open. And like I said, the Warriors, just because they have, you know, Klay Thompson and Durant, they run this play to death. And I think, you know, with Collison and Bogdanovich and Thaddeus Young shot almost 40% from three last year, you know, you have a lot of guys who would run Floppy really well. Do you agree with that or not so much?
Yes and no. I wouldn't be running like Thaddeus Young off of screens trying to get him three-pointers. I'd have him more as a stand in the corner, catch and shoot kind of guy if we want to extend him to that range. If you were to run Floppy, you'd want your guards off of that. Bogdanovich, I'm a little iffy on because he is a good shooter, but he did show a steep decline in his shooting percentages when he was running off of those screens. Not necessarily Floppy action, but any like pin downs or flare screens or anything like that. So I still think he'll be an okay shooter, but that might not be the best action for him specifically. However, I have access to the Synergy Sports Technology database. Okay. And all kinds of different granular little stats that you probably won't see floating around Twitter because most people don't really care. But by looking at all this stuff, you can really get a good sense of exactly what a guy's good at and what a guy's not good at. And I utilize these things for the school I'm at now. I'm in grad school, and I work for our basketball team, running the analytics department for us, and then also doing some scouting of opposing teams. And we use this data to say, okay, if I'm looking at Bogdanovich, I'm trying to make him move. I'm making him go off the dribble. I'm making him run around screens to get his shots. I'm not going to let him beat us by sagging off of him too much and catching and shooting. But to get back to your question, Floppy action would be, I think it would be good for this team. Corey Joseph is a good off-screen guy. Victor Oladipo is a good off-screen guy. Darren Collison is a good off-screen shooter. So you have shooters on your team. So this could still work. Maybe put Bogdanovich as the passer in this situation and then have the other guys running off of screens. And then once they get the ball on the wing, if they don't have a shot, you can have your big man come set a screen for them. You can just feed your big man in the post. A lot of times when the big defenders are trying to slow down these guards coming off of the screens, they might get out of position and expose themselves in the post. So that lends itself well to post-ups. Or if you were to then run a screen for the guy in the wing, you can, if he's going baseline, you can have some of that hammer action with the opposite wing getting a screen from the opposite big to run to the corner. So that would work well. Or maybe if you're doing a ball screen towards the middle of the floor, you can have your guy at the top of the key receive a flare screen from the opposite big and fade over to the wing. So there are a lot of different things you can do. I think Floppy is great to get the defense out of position and then attack from there if you don't have a shot initially. So yeah, I'd love to see it more. Like you said, the Warriors use it a lot. Lots of teams use it. Even the Lakers are using it. So we'll see if the Pacers will jump on that wagon.
I'm going to touch on this one briefly, even though I think it's a terrible idea. I think the most exciting play in basketball for me is called the elevator. Basically, you have a shooter under the basket again, and he runs up to the top of the key, and your post players on either elbow basically scoot in like elevator doors and close on his matchup, so he gets an open shot from the top of the key. It pretty much only works once per game because once you see the set, it's super easy to cheat and stop it. But I would love if once in the middle of the second quarter they ran that for somebody. I think it'd be very exciting, especially given that they have a couple good catch and shooters.
Yeah. Like you said, it works every once in a while. And when it does work, it's great. And I'm out of my seat before I know it and my pants are off. But it doesn't work all that much. And it's not something that you see run frequently. But when it does work, it's a great shot. That's one of the actions where, like, I love hammer action. And I love some of these other different kinds of things. I love span pick and rolls. And I love split cuts. Hammer action is the one I stray away from a little bit just because you kind of need a specific setup to make it work. But it can work. And if the Pacers wanted to run it every once in a while, I don't see why not.
So all of you have watched basketball before. If you're listening to this podcast, you know what a pick and roll is. But this new variation coming in much more recently is called the Spain pick and roll. And I don't actually think the Pacers would be great running the Spain pick and roll. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so what the Spain pick and roll is essentially just a normal pick and roll, but then your roll man, again, we'll just say Miles Turner, instead of him just rolling to the basket, he's going to be getting a back screen from someone else. So as he's rolling, the first thing they're doing is trying to deal with stopping the pick and roll. And then as he's trying to recover to Miles Turner, all of a sudden there's a screen there and he's out of position. And it's a great play if you have a really good lob threat, because you'll have a really short window of time where you just throw it up to DeAndre Jordan and he's yamming it down. Miles Turner, I'm not sure would be the best fit for it. You can do a lot of things. You can even go a step further where he's getting that screen and then the screener from that play is coming off of another screen, and that might be the more open shot than trying to feed Miles Turner on a lob. But it's something you could run. Thaddeus Young maybe would be better for that. I don't know. I don't watch enough Pacer basketball to know if Thaddeus Young can still jump or if that's hard for him to do.
Well, the reason I personally said it wouldn't work too well is because outside of Turner, they don't have a ton of good screeners. So as he would come to the basket, I don't know if that screen would be super effective. And like you said, he's not the best on lobs, and Collison is not a great lob passer, if even a good lob passer. So it's a really unique play, and the Clippers ran it well last year. I know the Wizards ran it a few times last year. I saw it a lot around the league last year, more than I ever had before, but I don't think the Pacers would be good at it, even as they start to kind of transition into a more modern world.
Here's the spot execution for it too. I was just going to say, like, it has to be perfect timing, and in like, especially if you don't have an excellent lob threat, it has to just be perfect timing. So it's a low percentage play if you don't have the perfect personnel for it.
But that's what made the Clippers so good at it, is because timing god Chris Paul and jump god DeAndre Jordan are literally the best two players to run in that situation.
Exactly.
All right, here's the hard question for you on the podcast. It's 95-95. Pacers have the ball with 18 seconds to go. They need a bucket to win the game. What play are you drawing up? What are you running?
Okay, let me pull out my basketball whiteboard. Who do we have on the floor?
Let's just go with the starting five. So Darren Collison, Victor Oladipo, Bojan Bogdanovic, Thaddeus Young, and Miles Turner.
Okay, and you said tie game, 18 seconds left?
Yeah, actually, no, let's say down one, because Ty, you might do a little conservative. Yeah.
Okay, I was going to say with Ty, I don't have to worry. I could just run a normal set play. I don't have to worry about time. Okay, I guess that doesn't change too much. all right, so what I would be doing is I'd – see, for me, it's all about the actions. So I'm going to try to fit some sort of pick and roll in here. I'm going to try to fit some hammer action. I think what I would want to do – is, you know what I talked about it earlier, we're going to go down, inbound the ball, just a normal inbounds, get down the floor because we have plenty of time, run some floppy action and get Collison and Oladipo coming off the screens, pass to whoever's most open. If they don't have the shot, we immediately follow that with a ball screen. So if Oladipo runs off of Turner's screen, catches the ball, Turner's immediately running up to set a screen, and we're going to try to drive baseline. And then as we're driving baseline, we're going to have hammer action on the opposite side with, so let's say Collison's the other guy over there. So Collison would be fading from the wing to the corner with a screen from Thaddeus Young. And then Thaddeus Young can cut to the rim after he sets that screen. And then trailing the drive would be Bojan Bogdanovic. So Oladipo gets the ball. He doesn't have the shot, but here comes Miles Turner, sets the screen. He drives baseline, 10 seconds left. He sees Darren Collison fading to the corner wide open, passes it over there, and we've got a catch and shoot. Corner three, open corner three, best shot you can get in basketball. So I'd be happy with that. And then we also have several guys will be around the rim as that shot's going up to potentially get an offensive rebound.
Yeah, I like that everyone dove to the rim at the end to play for the rebound. All right, that was pretty good. You got any final touches you want to talk about with the Pacers playbook in general, or are you good?
Let me take a look at my notes. I don't know. I think what will make the difference for the Pacers this year is they're going to need to do things differently from what they did last year. Last year, there was a lot of one action per play. They'd dribble down and there'd be a pin down screen for Paul George, and that's it. There's nothing else going on. And for them to be really effective, because they don't have that superstar on their team this year, and they have some good young players, but they really don't have that guy yet. So you're going to have to be smart and be combining actions and doing multiple things. So you've got a guy coming off of a pin down or dribbling off of a ball screen or something like that. And then on the weak side, you have other action taking place. So like when you're designing an offense, I'm trying to figure out how many attacks can I have in quick succession without it becoming too complicated, and allow there to be easy reads, good spacing, but get lots of guys potentially open shots. So if the Pacers can do some of the same things they did last year, but then throw in just an extra pin down on the weak side or an extra flare screen or an extra hammer action, that can make such a difference to an offense. And if I'm looking at all the top offenses in the league, all of them have great schemes and all of them have this component of having that weak side action. This is something the Pacers were good at last year when they did their post-ups with their flare screens, but they can get much better with it in their pick and rolls. And if they can do that, they're going to get easier shots at the rim from those pick and rolls and then open threes. So that would be my parting recommendation for Indiana.
Yeah, just in general, I think more cutting, more movement, move the ball more. I don't want to say look like the Warriors, because not everyone can have the best personnel possible, but
you can run a smart scheme. Anybody can run a smart scheme.
Yeah, and I trust that there will be more scheming going on this year because of the departure of their top 20 players. So I'm excited to see how they pull it off. I'm excited to see how it goes down. Rangers, thanks for joining me. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, the presenting sponsor is SeatGeek. Use the code LONBA at checkout for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. And we'll see you guys tomorrow. Follow Tim at T1M_NBA and me at TEastNBA. Have a great Wednesday.